I know there is an awful lot of names in the next chapter. What I think is very important, and I want to try to do this, we will not reach through the entire chapter today. And the reason is because it's broken up basically in three separate sections. It has to do with the generations of the sons of Noah. And it's broken into three sections. One is from one son, second section is from the second son, or not second son, but second order. And the last one is from the last order. And each one of these names, as we go through it, we're going to try to figure out exactly why God has us to try to, you know, why these names are written down there rather than we just don't know who they are. Or we don't care what they are. But yet at the very same time, I did some research. I found it very interesting that some of these things, names, will come at the latter days. And if you believe that we are in the latter days, then maybe we should pay attention to the names. All right? Because in the beginning, it tells you the end. So we're here in the book of Genesis, and we're in chapter 10. There's an awful lot of stuff I read on chapter 10 over the years. And I find that they are very, very interesting ones to do. I am being surprised, tell you the honest truth, if we get past verse, I hope to reach all the way to verse 10, 9, rather. Just the first 9 verses. So, you know, it's a lot of, that's just the one family we're talking about today. So when we're looking at these names, it helps us to maybe there's a pattern and maybe there is not a pattern. But it's very fascinating that God had these specifically written down. And for us, now there are some names here, there is little or no meaning or a guess in what the meaning is from not from Hebrew, but from the area in which they were the family migrated to or was moved to or God placed them to into their dialect of the Sephardic, I'm not Sephardic language, of the I guess it was the Semitic language, not Semitic language, Semitic, that's what I want, yeah. Different dialects, and you go, you know, you walk away from that for a while, you live someplace else for a while, your language changes, or the definition of words change, and we know that for sure, because we speak English, but not English. We speak American English, and most of us speak California American English. If you go farther south, they may not have talked about but that's how it is. Different words mean different things. So Genesis chapter 10, I'm just going to read here. Now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and unto them were sons born after the flood. So we're talking about now the sons of these three men. Because basically that's what God wants us to know. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, Madai, and Javan, Tubal, Mishkan, and Tiras. So we're going to go through some of these names. See if we can't have some kind of purpose behind it, that we can see why God spent his time. First, let's take the first name that's listed here, of course. That is the son of Japheth. What it has is a Japhet. It's a yod and a fe and a tet. I mean a tav. And what does that word mean? Okay. His name means, basically, to expand, get bigger, or open to be spacious. Be open or be wide. So expand, his name basically means his family is going to expand wide, large, and all over a significant amount. Remember we read previously, though, is that Japheth will be under the tent of Shem. That means the protection of Shem. Has to do with that we talked about before, of a certain seed that goes through. And so they'd be protected under the seed that is to be there, under Shem, meaning the seed that goes all the way down to the Messiah. So Gomer, the firstborn son, what does it say there? It says here that his name is, means to be completed or to be come to an end or to complete a task. Basically, that's all that name means. But then let's find out a little more. Where are they? Who are they? Where they live? Where they come from? Now, they had a piece of, I thought for sure it was out there because it was last there last week. And I said, well, I don't need to make a copy of it. I went out there. Nope, it's not there. I could, yeah, it was last week, but not this week. I just checked it anyway. It was kind of fascinating. So, Gomer, or what do you think his, who are they? Well, I did my research many, many years ago, and basically there are people beyond the Caucasus Mountains in the Black Sea area. They're not out there, I didn't see them. Anyway, so what does that mean to us? Well, you know, why don't we take a look and see what God says about them? How's that sound? We're just going to hit some highlights in the prophets. We're going to Ezekiel, chapter 38. Go to Ezekiel 38. And let's find out what it is about them. Chapter 38, 37, 38, and 39 are full of these. Most of the ones are listed here under the sons of Japheth. So we'll go to 38 and we'll read. Let's start reading verse 1. Now the words of Yahuwah came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Gog. But to find out what that name means in the future, and the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and prophesy against them, and saying, Thus says the Lord God, because of I am against you, O Gog, a prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, I will turn you around and put into your jaws. And lead you out with all your army, horses and horsemen, splendidly clothed and great company with bucklers and shield, all of them handling swords. Persia, Prussia, Ethiopia, Libya are with them, all of them that shield their helmet. Verse 6. Gomer and all his troops in the house of Togarmah from the far north, as all in the troops, many will be. Now, far north. So, it kind of tells you about the general area in which Gomer was in with one of his other companions, and that is in the far north. Far north of what? From what's the center? Yeah, basically, center of basically Jerusalem. That's when you always talk about the west of. We're talking about the center of God's world, and that is the Jerusalem itself. So, what do you see there? God has said, I have something against you. Now, what is it you have against him? I find it very fascinating that his name means completion. To the end, come to an end. It's almost like it's written there in the very beginning, isn't it? That he will come to an end. He will be completed. He'll be finished. He'll cease to be. You find that fascinating a little bit? We're talking about Gomer. Keep this in mind. Now let's go to the very next name. What is Magog or Magog? What does that mean? A lot of different interpretations. What does the name mean? Okay, land of Gog. We'll talk about Gog. It's important to know what Gog is. Mountain. All right. Very important understanding of the word mountain. Now, when you think of a mountain, what do you think of? Biblically speaking. A kingdom, a power, a might. So now we're talking about Gog and a mountain, or Gog, who is of great power and great strength, a great endurance, right? Now, where is that? A lot of people believe it is where Turkey is, or part of Turkey. Because it's very fascinating that, according to prophecy, if I understand it, okay, all due respect to an awful lot of different people, interpretation of it, but I think it was Wallace Shubat who mentioned that Turkey will be the one that will attack Israel. And you know right now in history, what's happening between Israel and Turkey today? Are they friends? And now they will no longer do military maneuverings together? And Turkey is going to play a big game at the end of it, because Turkey is slowly moving into the world of the Ottoman Empire. Now, Turks, by the way, when we were in war, the Korean War, and the Turkey was our ally, and the Americans were just stunned how brutal and deadly and mean the Turks were. Yeah, right.
I talked to friends who, when I was teaching English, the Korean Marines, they can tell you stories about the Turks.
they're nasty. They've been known, because that's the way they are. They are one of the most brutal group of killers, and they cut the heads off, they take the skin, they shrink the head, they bring it home for souvenir. That's gross. But pretty powerful, you know. Turks are not known for their hospitality. So, we're at this particular place, and now we have this word of Magog. And now we have to ask ourselves some questions. But before we do, let's turn to Ezekiel. We're still there in the 39th chapter, very next chapter. Now, we hear a little bit more, because the name Gog is listed. Okay? Chapter 39, and you, son of man, prophesy against Gog, and say, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, Gog, the chief. Now, Gog means mountain. Gog means mountain, or chief. Prince, he's the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. So now he has power over four different, by the way, their family in this chapter. In Genesis, you see this. They're all connected together. Now, so in the land, we see these other two, in relationship, basically brothers, are going to join Gog and take over. Do some very part of destruction. I do not know. Well, we'll look at that as we go on and find it out. But you know that Gomer is not listed there in the 39th chapter. So we need to look at what's happening. It's a very interesting prophecy. I'll talk about that if I can reach it today, about what Judah will be doing to Gog. That is Judah, not Israel, Judah. Fascinating. And so let's go on. And he says, too, and I will turn you around and lead you on, bringing you up from the far north and bring you against the mountains of Israel. So we know by prophecy, this is why Wallace Shubat says, no, that he knows that they have that country. They use different words. They don't use English words. Turk, by the way, is a tribe. Is the most dominant tribe that controls the land of Turkey. That's the reason why it's called Turkey, because the dominant warlords own it. They control it. Unlike us in our world, we have elections. They just have warlords. They take over, and they're not necessarily kind people. Okay, let's go on now. And it says, thus I will knock the bow out of your left hand and cause the arrows to fall out of your right hand. That's interesting. Left hand, right hand. What's in his left hand? A bow. What's his right hand? The arrow. Is he right-handed or is he left-handed? It's just a funny statement. But why is it important about the left hand and the right hand? Why would God say to Gog, I am going to take the bow out of your left hand? Yeah, like.
One is the item that does the injury. One is the ability to fight. Your bow is your ability to fight. Your arrows are the tool that you're sending against the other person.
Okay, Daniel?
I believe it says, Judah is my bow and Ephraim is my arrow, or vice versa. It's identifying that one of those nations is the bow and the other nation is the arrow.
There's three tribes.
No, there's actually two.
Oh, right, there's two.
Because Rosh is not actually a tribe.
Right.
It is a title. It means chief.
So I find it very fascinating. And they shall fall upon the mountains of Israel, and you and all your troops and the people who are with you, I will give you to the birds and prey of every sort and of the beast of the field to be devoured. When? When's he going to do this? Yesterday? Last week? 5 years ago? 100 years ago? Soon.
It was probably a few years from now, give or take.
Yeah, because we know in the book of Revelations, the name shows up again, doesn't it? Gog shows up again. Mountain shows up again. A prince shows up again. Someone who's got power and might, and he's got three others with him. Three others with him to go all the way. Well, he may be one of the three. I'm not quite sure which. But the land of Gog means the territory in which Gog has a principality over, okay, or jurisdiction over. I know many of you have come to know that in the Afghan war, and there was always called about the warlords, like hundreds of warlords, and they kept fighting against one another. That's what they do. Now, Gog has to take control. And so he probably will do the very same pattern in taking control of these other three countries by sheer force. Possible. I don't know. I'm just guessing like everybody else is. But finding out, why is God wanting us to take a look? He named way back at Genesis. Right? Remember that? So it's very fascinating as we go through this thing. Let's go down to verse 11 because I want to keep on going. It will come to pass in that day that I will give Gog a burial place there in Israel. He's going to give Gog a burial place. The valley of those who pass by east and of the sea, and it will be and it will obstruct travelers because there they will bury Gog and his multitude. Therefore, the valley will be called Hamon Gog. What does that mean? Sorry, what? Interesting phrase, isn't it? Technically, the word comes from to murmur, to cry aloud. Also means to be disquieted. Fascinating. The valley will be quiet. Who's in the valley? Gog. Remember that? Gog is in the valley. Verse 15. And the search of the party, we pass through the land, and wherever everyone sees a man's bones, they shall set up a marker by it until the buriers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. Now, we have some prophecy that burial takes a long time. Yeah, literally months. So, people sometimes are afraid, and truly they should be, if they don't understand. And I know many times of you people have heard that Gog or Magog is supposed to be Russia. Right? In the past, you've heard that in story. It doesn't make sense because, biblically speaking, that's not where they're at. They were just in north of Israel. Far north, meaning there was far north, for that means it wasn't the next door neighbor. You had to go farther north to get into it, to get there. Now, let's go take a look at Revelations 20. We're talking about Gog now. Now, Gog is the what? He's the prince. He's the power. He's the might. Remember, the devil was released from his prison, and he deceived, I use that word deceived because he deceives the whole world, the prince of, or Gog, the prince of the land that Gog controls. All right. And it said now chapter 20, verse 8 in Revelation, and shall go out to deceive the nations, meaning the devil, which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together into battle. We're just reading right there in the 39th chapter of Ezekiel, right? And what's going to happen there? The number of whom is the sand of the seas. You can't count them, too many of them. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camps of the saints about and the beloved city. Means Jerusalem, right? They entered into that city. They managed to get their troops coming down and doing what they're going to do. And then what happened?
And
they devoured them. Well, remember, how does God devour with fire? How does God devour with fire? If they all burned up in ashes, there's no need to bury them. Right? You remember, there was two sons who were, fire came out and killed them, and they had to carry away the bodies and bury them. So when we think of fire, we think of the physical fire that you actually feel and burns your hand. Biblically speaking, when it says that God brings forth the fire, or a fire will come before him, he's not referring to a real fire, like a forest fire, or a big, huge fire gun. He's talking about his power. Fire is the same concept of water is. What does water do? As so will destroy. It can clean and can destroy. Fire from God can either cleanse you, purge you, make you gold, fine pure gold, or it can kill you. Take a choice. And so this fire that's coming out from heaven, from the throne, the Father himself, and devoured them. Meaning they just stopped. They couldn't fight anymore. They were dead. And we have in Ezekiel, which we just got to read there in the 15th chapter, on the 15th verse there, it's going to take a long time. It had to put a marker where the bodies were at. So the burial people come pick up the body and bury them, but it's in a valley. You ever heard of mass graves? Well, long before World War II, there's mass graves. So it's quite common to, if you got this, you got to bury them as fast as you can. Because if you don't, what happens? Yeah, the disease pops up. So, and now in Genesis chapter 10, he tells us about this man, or talks about Gog, although we just kind of name it, says, okay, the land of Gog. Who's he? Does it matter? So when we look at this chapter 10, God is telling us what is in the future for these nations. Doesn't look very good, does it? Doesn't look very good at all, does it? Now, why would God do this? Why would he list these names and then have them show up in prophecy? There's a couple of names that do not show up in prophecy, but that's okay. But all these names right now, they're with just Japheth right now, they show up in prophecy, and it's not good news for the sons of Japheth at all. Do you see this? Pretty bad, isn't it? Pretty bad. And he had another son. What was the other son's name? That is Japheth. Madai. You know what that name means? It just means the middle land. The middle land. Oh. The middle. These people are dwelling in the middle of a land. All right? Now, according to, if I understand this right, according to Walter Schubot, and he could be right on this one, they are the Kurds. Where do the Kurds live? They have a country? No, they don't. Where do the Kurds live? Yeah, they just live in the middle of all that, the midst of it, the center of it all. Although particular nations, which are, of course, the nations of the Muslim country, as we call them today. And the Kurds are Muslims, by the way. Yes?
Aren't they also nomadic?
Doesn't say they're nomadic. I mean, I've heard it say that, but I don't know for sure. I don't know that much of the history. I'm sorry, what?
They are now.
They are now. They have not been nomadic for a long, long time. But in the middle, they're in the middle of it, and guess what? Now it says here that the Medes, it's also referred to the word the Medes. Because the book of Daniel uses the very same word that's here in in the 10th chapter of Genesis. It says there in the book of Daniel, chapter 8, verse 20. And the ram which thou saw having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. Now, we always call it the land of the Medes and the Persians, right? Well, it's a different dialect, a different language that we use today. And so we call them the Medes. But so even then, way back, where were the Medes? Huh?
Iran.
They were in the northwestern section, what we call Iran today, modern Iran today. That was not Iran way back in the very beginning. The southern end was Persia. The northern end was Maeda, or what we call Medes. Two different peoples. Now we know in the book of Daniel, it was Darius, I guess it was, if I'm not mistaken, really, really liked Daniel. And he made a really stupid thing. And, of course, God delivered him out of it, or delivered Daniel out of it. But that's another story altogether. We're not going to go there. We're going to pick it up some things that we need to find out about these things. Best that I can do. Now, Javan or Yavan, it literally means high-spirited. Lively. High-spirited person. In my research, I found that that's part of Turkey. I mean, part of Greece. Not all of Greece, just part of Greece. Some of the islands off the coast of Greece. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what my research was. And it could be off. I don't know. Sorry, what? Yeah, I can't prove it by anything else except what it's just really a hard one to find. Because it's weird that his name means high-spirited. And I don't think the Greeks were high-spirited. Huh? Oh, yeah, no. The breaking down of the other word means to wine, having wine, or ye. Right. But it's a bunch of drunk Greeks. All right, we're doing okay, aren't we? Okay, but I said we're not getting very far today. And the next one is Tubal. Now, we've already read that in Tubal. It's listed there in the 39th chapter of Ezekiel. He's also listed in the 27th chapter of Ezekiel. And this is what it says there, 27th chapter, verse 13. Javan, Tubal, and Miskal. Okay, well, that's the same names over here. Oh, except Rosh, Rush. They were thy merchants. Oh, so that makes them Tubal a merchant, a businessman, buying and selling. But what were they buying and selling? They what? You should have it in yours. People! Slave traders! They're merchants, all right, but they were buying and selling, merchandising people into slavery. And also vessels, you know, expensive stuff. Basically a brass. Miskal. Remember, he's also listed here. Miskal in the 39th chapter of Ezekiel. What's he noted for? Ezekiel 38, verse 2. Son of man, set thy face against Gog, land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach, Tubal, and prophesy against them. Verse 3. And say, thus says Adonai Yahuwah, behold, I'm against you, O Gog, chief of Meshach and Tubal. Isn't that funny? Where do you think Meshach was at? Where do you think he was living? So what does drawing out mean? Drawing out. What does it mean to draw out? God said, I am going to draw Gog out. This is a prophecy of drawing something out. Draw them out to where? Where is God going to draw this man, or his family or other? Where is he going to draw them to?
It's a sucker trick.
It's a sucker trick.
He makes them think they can win. And so they say, you know, I think I can do it. And then they go out there and then God smacks them.
So they're drawing out, or they're going to seize, to draw out, to take over. But not necessarily in this case, because they're coming from the north with Gog, and they're going to get into the holy city, and God says, by the way, you took the bait and hook. You took the bait and hook. How did they take the bait and hook? Okay. How did they take the bait? And how did Gog take the bait? You forgot already? Revelations. The devil says he released him from his prison and used the devil. What it says? It says now, it's the devil who deceives the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth. Oh. Was Gog deceived? That's what it says in Revelations. Okay? That's what it says in Revelations. So Turkey's going to be deceived into believing that they can destroy Israel. What a... Is that, that's a prophecy. Way back in the 10th chapter of Genesis. You understand what I'm saying? It tells you by the names of the people, who they are, where they live, and what God does using their name, it's action of God against them. Do you find that fascinating? When I go, we have a lot of names to go through here. Hope I don't get too bored with this. Where are we at now? Nataras, I have not found a good for a name. It just means desire, and it's just a nation from the north. I couldn't find any more information about this particular a tribe of people. But those are the sons of, those are the direct sons, I should say, of Japheth, or Japhat. Now, of course, their sons had sons. Right? So we're still talking about Japhat and his line, or the descendants of him. And now it says to Ashkenaz, verse 3. The sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, Raphat, and Togarmah. All right. Now, what do you think Ashkenaz means? Yes, Ellie.
Well, since we have Ashkenaz and Jews that come from Germany, and they speak Ashkenaz Hebrew, which is mixed with German, it's probably Germany.
Okay. I'm sorry, what? As a man is sprinkled, as a man is sprinkled, what? Ashkenaz, as a man is sprinkled. What does that mean? Spread out, sprinkled all over, because it says, Japheth, the name is one that expands and goes outwardly. Sprinkled, a little bit here, a little bit there. Now we have to figure out, okay, what? Jeremiah, chapter 51. Kind of tells you where this man, these people are. Jeremiah, chapter 51. Let's go to verse 27. Jeremiah 51, verse 27. Then it says, set up, set ye up a standard in the land. Blow the trumpet among the nations. We'll get to that word later. Prepare the nations against her. Oh, really? Against whom? And call together against her the kingdoms of Arafat, Minah, and Ashkenaz. Appoint a captain against her. Cause the horses to come up as a rough through a rough caliber. Now, what is he talking about here? Jeremiah 51, huh? Jeremiah 51. This is where he shows up in Scripture. Did I say 27? Yeah. Prepare, verse 28, prepare against her the nations with the kings of Medes, its government, governors, and all its rulers, and all the land of his dominion. The land will be troubled will tremble and sorrow, for every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon. Oh, what? Babylon? Babylon? I didn't see it here. Who are the Ashkenazis? We know they're the sons of Gomer. Right? This is one of his sons. And now he is going to be connected with his other brother, Togarmath, which means thou wilt break her. And you're going to turn here, Isaiah, Ezekiel 38, verse 6. Gomer and his band, his house of, and the house of Togarmath of the north quarters. North quarters of what? North quarters of where? Well, let's go back to chapter 38. Ezekiel 38. What are the north quarters? Well, first verse. 38. Did I say 38? Yeah, I'm sorry. Of Ezekiel. Now the word of Yahuwah came to me, saying, O son of man, set your face against Gog. We read it before, in the land of Magog, and the prince of Rush, and bishop of Mishkah and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Against whom? Against Gog. Okay, against God. Now it says here that Gomer, verse 6, and all his troops in the house of Togarmath, from the far north, and all the troops, many people are with you. So now we know it's in the northern quarter of the far north section of where Gog's power is. Where is now the north quarter? Look at Turkey for a moment. Where is the north quarter? Now we're thinking geographically now in our modern terminology where Turkey's at, right? What's north of Turkey?
Armenia.
There, and today, it's all, if not Armenia, it's all now Muslims. I can't remember the name of that country, but it's, remember the Black Sea? We'll get to the word Black Sea in a minute, what it means in Hebrew. That terminology we use when it means we use the word isle or island. It doesn't restrict it to an island. It means to an island or anybody living on the coast. All right, so you go north. What says what part north? Of the north quarters. So that tells you that Gog is going to have power over some countries just north of Turkey. Do you get that understanding? I think that's what I'm seeing. Does that make sense to you? So we see that Turkey, we put it ourselves today on the physical map of Turkey, which is part of Europe and then part of Asia Minor. But biblically speaking, Gog is going to have control over not only the land that we call Turkey today, but over three other countries, including this one. Who's in the northern quarters? Yes, Ellie.
Verse 4 says he's putting hooks on his jaw and calling him out. And a great company are with you. And then it says Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya are with them, all of them. And then it says Gomer and all its troops in the house of Togarmath from the far north.
So
and all its
how
troops.
Big...
Yeah,
how much power does Gog have?
But does that mean Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya are uniting with Gog or against?
No, they're with Gog. Later on, we're not there yet, but we get into the sons of Ham. We're going to find out more about them, all right? But we're not there yet. We're just talking about just one family right now. Yes.
Just bring back to the ongoing news, there's at least 7 different nations binding together, all Muslim. 10. 10 nations binding together, all Muslim nations. So this fits prophecy.
Liberia, as we think of today, where the physical land is still the same country. Yeah, same country. Has not moved. Ethiopia basically is what I think it's probably true. It's not Egypt. It is Sudan. The country is below Sudan. Sudan. No, Ethiopia is the one farther south. But according to Wallace Shubat, that's not the real name of that country beneath Egypt. It is known
it's
as
Sudan.
Ethiopia.
Sudan is what it's referring
Sudan.
To.
Sudan. He calls it Ethiopia because that's what it once was. It's split in part. What happened? That massive country divided in two. So, since we're not there yet in the book of Ham, these the descendants of Ham now. These 3 names here you see listed there. We're not there yet. But we do see Gog having either control over or great influence over. Now, look at Israel today. The physical country of Israel. What nation is even the United States concerned about when it comes to Israel? Oh, no. Egypt. Egypt. Yes, we understand Persia, which would be called Iran today, right? That we understand, but its names, Ethiopia and Libya. Where's Turkey? Why isn't Egypt there yet? We have to find out, because God has something to say about Egypt. Yes.
Egypt is not Japheth, that's Ham. The scripture calls Egypt Ham, the sons of Ham.
Yeah, they are. And so is Ethiopia, and so is Libya. But Persia is not.
Oh.
We'll have to go into Persia, where Persia really came from. Okay, we're not there yet. But you understand what I'm saying? Well, the very beginning of chapter 10 of Genesis gives all these names for us to try to understand where it's going to fit toward the end of time. And how many nations, according to the word of God, who are going to come against Israel. Now we start talking about the time when God uses his power from the north, coming down. He's going to have door wide open because Egypt's not going to do anything. Egypt is changing their whole course. Are they not now changing the whole course? They want to break off all treaties, break off all connections, break off everything. And even shut down the gas lines and oil lines. Right now, they're making money on it, but they had to figure out how they can get away with it without cutting it off. And Egypt, Israel will be sensitive. We'd be in trouble. Talk about your gasoline being $5 a gallon. There's going to be about $100 a gallon. You think average guy's going to get in his car or go to work? Nah, can't afford it. So it's going to be very devastating to Israel. So now, we see at the end times, this is telling us a lot in chapter 10 of Genesis, who they are, what's it about, and where they're coming to. Now, the other sons of Rafat, I have not found much about him. The name really means spoken. Either spoken to or as a spokesman for Gog, I do not know. I do not know. I do not understand that one at all. Now in the 4th verse is the sons of Yavan, or Yavan, Elisha, Tarshish, and Kittim, and Donanim. We're going to cut it off pretty close here now. The very first name is a very interesting one. His son's first name is named what? Elisha. What? Has a very unusual meaning. God of the coming. God of the coming. Wow. Is he talking about Allah? No, the Bible's not talking about Allah. The Bible talks about God. God of the coming, or the God of the coming one. Someone is going to come for God. Who's going to come for God to do God's will? The Messiah. That's the fast. That's the last. That's the last name in the listing of Japheth's sons. Right? Do you notice that? The last name listed in amongst the sons. Find that fascinating. No, Javan is the last son of Japheth. Okay, that's it. Okay, don't get confused what I'm saying here. It's the first son of this particular guy. I don't know much more to say to that. I couldn't find any more scripture about him at that particular point in time, to tell you the honest truth. Tarshish. Now, Tarshish is just full of all over the place in the Bible. What's this most known for? Known for what?
Jonah.
Okay.
Where he tried to flee to.
Okay. Throughout Isaiah, over and over again, he talks about something from Tarshish will come against Israel. The ships of Tarshish. That phrase is used abundantly in Isaiah. The ships of Tarshish. Yes, they are traders. Yes, they are merchants. And they'll do other things as well. I didn't want to list everything in Isaiah. So many of them, I said, okay, there's a bunch of them listed there in Isaiah about Tarshish, the ships of Tarshish. That's not good for them. Not good news for them. It basically means yellow jasper in real English. Then Kittim. Kittim. Interesting word. What does Kittim mean? You ready to look it up? Quick.
Bruisers.
One that brings forth the damage. Or is going to be bruised. However you want to look at it. A dananim. What does that mean? Yeah, leaders. Leaders of what? Okay, let's backtrack just a little bit here. We got these four names. It's very fascinating. One, the first one is God of the coming, and then the one of yellow jasper, and then the bruisers, and then the leaders. I don't know the picture. If you guys got an idea what those three things mean, speak up. All I know is that they're merchants also. Oh, by the way, it says islanders. I got to talk about the word islander. Verse 5. Now, we're talking a class of the sons of one of the sons of Noah. By these were the isles, we'll talk about that in a minute, of the Gentiles, divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, in their nations. What does that mean? Ham's never called Gentiles. Family of Ham never called Gentiles. The family of Japheth has been called Gentiles. Now, you have to be careful because meaning of the words change. When it says that God's going to make Israel a kingdom of priests, or a nation of priests, the same word Gentile or Goyim is used in relationship to Israel being also called Gentile. So it's not really important, except at this particular point in time, I'm looking at all these nations that are very Muslim today, the family of Japheth, centered completely all around. Now Ham's also going to be very centered around Muslims. We see it very clearly. Those two are joined together to do something. And they're going to come against it. Now, what does isles mean? We think it means islands. Yes, it can mean islands, but also means something else. Coastal people along the coast, or coastal people who have ports. Right? In the Middle East now, what is the most important port? Where's it located at?
Qatar.
Qatar?
Qatar.
Qatar. Where's it at?
Qatar. It's a country. It is the most important vital port in the entire Middle East. Almost all the oil in the whole Middle East goes through that country.
All right. What's another port over near the passways? The what? Red Sea? How about the Black Sea and the Mediterranean?
Straits of Gibraltar. Not the other end. Not the other end. But you can't get
into. Now, somewhere along this land, I don't have a picture of it all, I just don't have it, but it means those who seem to control the waterways and the ports. Now, look at Israel today. Later on, we'll find out the other land, like Lebanon, has really good natural port. Israel doesn't have any. They depend upon, they always had to depend upon, travel. People traveling to and buying and selling in their own country. They didn't have a bunch of ships. Israel was not known for their navy. They're still not known for their navy. Because they don't have a natural place. Now, right now, because of that one, Hell yeah. That now they have that, but they didn't have it back then. And there's no guarantee they're going to have it now in the future. What I find very fascinating here is everyone after his tongue and after his families in their nations. Yes?
I was just noticing also in that the isles, the origins is to covet, to be greedy, prefer, to desire.
Oh, yeah, desire for the.
Yeah, because, I mean, that connects with the. To the Gentiles.
Yeah, but we're talking here, though, a certain segment of individuals or of nations having to do with propheticness, and the Bible's telling us exactly what those nations he's talking about, and it's the sons of Japheth. Maybe not characteristics. We can assume that's the characteristic. That's might be thinking about these things, but it's like putting a label upon them that really wasn't there in the first place. Label is something different. Let God do the labeling, but not because of the characteristic of the person. Because otherwise God's going to label me. Yeah, definition of it. Now, you have to be careful about some of those things. That's my personal input, okay? Because, you know, it's like saying every Muslim is a rotten, crooked, liar, and cheat. Label them because they're Muslim. Or label them because they're, or let's put it bluntly. Label a Catholic because the Catholic is of whatever. All right? So you've got a bad day. If you're Catholic, you're bad. It's a characteristic of being a Catholic because you're Catholic. Born a Catholic, you ought to be a Catholic. It doesn't work. Right? So we've got to be careful when things are being given a title or being identified as something. Be careful, because not necessarily, because we're going to get the book of Egypt. Because God says about Egypt, talk about how that name came about, what that name means next week. And God did say, my beloved people. Although the name is a label. Okay? We got to be careful. Okay? Okay, I have nothing else to say. I know it's kind of a little laborious today. But I think it's very fascinating that looking at these things that took place in the names are written in the 10th chapter, and we only went through one of the sons of Noah and his generation, and Noah's son's generation, and has certain meaning of words, names, and where they were, where they're from. And as we kind of look at these things now, they're very strong Muslim countries today. Not European. Not American. Not South American. Not South Africa. Not China. All right? Yes.
That New York City was Babylon, and that was the attack against it. It flies in the face of what Babylon is in the book, of where it is. This is also, you can hear the fall of Babylon from the Red Sea, which is hard to do if it's New York.
Do I have that written down here? No, it has to do with the family of Ham. it has to do with the family of Ham. Not the family of Japheth, but the family of Ham. Okay, hopefully we'll talk about that next week, okay? Because Babylon comes from the family of Ham. Didn't come from the family of Japheth.